Hey, it's Paulette again, and I'm honored to bring you another episode here on the Thriving in Chaos Project, now in its fourth season. I bring you resilient survivors, key resources, and experts in their fields to lighten the load and shine a light on the path forward from confusion to conclusion through all things divorce and transformation. So let's get started. I am hosting a retreat in Belize. Some of you may know, but I used to live there. And Belize is a melting pot of culture that carries over into the food, the music, and the fun. It is the best of both vibes, from jungles to ground you and beaches to heal and soothe. I lived there for many years and go back and forth between there and Atlanta because I can't get enough. My co-host, Tierra, visited me and didn't want to leave either. No one does. This is paradise, folks. My co-host Tierra and I chatted about the perfect all-inclusive location for you ladies that are going through a pivot in your life and need to reset, renew, and rebuild, and we nailed it. We kick off with a three-day adventure in the luxurious eco-resort Copal Tree in the southern Belize jungle, followed by three luxurious days on Thatch Cay Island, a private island over water, oceanfront oasis in the turquoise Caribbean along the Belize Barrier Reef. Whether you're going through or just coming out of a divorce, especially with a narcissist, a career change, or you just want to get back to the parts of you that you haven't seen in a while, we are talking to you. Make note, May 4th to the 10th, 2024, and start packing. Space is very limited on the private island and in the jungle. Be sure to act now. We have a passion for leading truly transformational healing events, from heart-opening, accessible guided meditations to connection-based life-changing tools and practices. We curate each moment with care and compassion to ensure every lady is taken care of from the initial registration to the final namaste. It's better in Belize. Hello, and welcome back to the Thriving in Chaos Project with Paulette Rigo, your host. I started this podcast about 5 years ago to bring experts in their fields to you, that person who is in any and all stages of divorce, whether you are contemplating, researching, trying to manage, survive, or heal from divorce. I got you. And today is no different. I am bringing to you Joy Rosenthal, Esquire. And Joy is a family law attorney from New York. So welcome to the podcast, Joy. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Paulette. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's interesting how people find me from all over the country and sometimes all over the world because of the work I do as a mediator, a certified divorce coach, and the director of coaching and case management for Divorce Right. But your work is family law, and I love the fact that you have a roadmap to help people with. So before we get into that and a little bit of your story, tell me a little bit about your bio and who you are and why you do what you do.
Well, I'm based in Brooklyn. I had an office in Manhattan until COVID shut down. I started out for 10 years representing children in Bronx and Brooklyn family court and got to work with hundreds and hundreds of children. And at that point, I was litigating every day, all day in family court, and I kind of just burn out on litigation. And I noticed that a lot of the cases really could be mediated. I got very interested in mediation. And so in 2006, I went out on my own. And I then had to learn about divorce law because the cases I was working on was mostly foster care, custody, and visitation, that kind of thing, adoptions. Right. And so I learned about divorce law, and now I teach family law at the City University of New York School of Law. And I mostly only do divorce mediation and what's called collaborative law, which is sort of an offshoot of mediation. You probably know about it. So I only do uncontested cases, but most of my practice is divorce mediation. And then I noticed a big gap. When we were talking before, you were saying that there are so many mistakes that you made. And I find a lot of people say this, and I think that there's a big information gap. So I started an online course also called Landing on Your Feet, A Compassionate Lawyer's Guide to Divorce. And I'll give you the links later so you can put them in the show notes. But I really do find that there's a lot of education and there's a lot of information. There's wonderful people like you. You're kind of all over the place and work with people all over the place, which is just fantastic. It's so necessary because I find that there's often a power imbalance where one person knows a lot more about the finances than the other or something like that. So anyway, that's a quick,
well,
quick bio.
Yeah, I could go in a million directions. So, but let me segue a bit. As you said, you work in collaborative law in uncontested cases, but you previously used to work with children in either custody or adoption. So has your previous work or how has your previous work affected your viewpoint or your sensitivity to working now in family law overall?
That's such an important question. You know, when I started, I went to a collaborative law training, and there was all of the other people in the training were divorce lawyers who were trying to learn how to be more compassionate or learn how to be more neutral. Because in order to go do collaborative law, you have to also be trained as a mediator. And I met one of my classmates and he gave me his business card, which said, "If your spouse is a louse, I'll get you the house." And I looked at him.
That's
it's
hysterical.
Funny and very memorable. I don't remember his name, but I remember what the card said. But I looked at him and I said, "What are you doing here?" Because obviously, it's not really actually how the law works.
but it rhymes, Joy, and you have to admit it's got a good ring to it, right?
Absolutely.
If your spouse is a louse, I'll get you the house, right?
Right. So he said, "Well, I needed the continuing legal education credits." He had no intention of becoming a collaborative attorney. And I thought to myself, I looked around the room and I said to myself, I need to learn divorce law. I can do that. I went to law school. I know what the basis is. You know, like I can learn what the statute says. I can read the case law. I understand that. They have to learn how to be neutral from being litigators, because in law school, we're trained to be zealous advocates for our clients. And most divorce lawyers are going into it saying, "I'm going to fight for my client." And sometimes that's absolutely necessary when there's abuse going on, when there's a huge power imbalance, when one person's hiding assets or something, that the other spouse absolutely needs a strong advocate. But a lot of times people will say in the beginning, "I don't want to hurt the kids. Mm-hmm. I want this to be amicable." The kids don't want their parents to fight. Right? Kids want everybody to get along. That's what I learned from interviewing hundreds and hundreds of children. Kids want the parents in their life to agree to get along and to listen to them. And I know from seeing some divorces in my friends and family close up that it can be really easy to get caught in the conflict of fighting with your spouse and thinking that you're doing the best thing for your kids and protecting them, but not really paying attention to what their experience is. Mm. So I think my background helps me help my clients think about what's going on for their kids and help them stay focused on that.
And I think that gives you a bit of a more compassionate, empathetic wiser view, maybe more like a peripheral view than the traditional family law litigator. And you brought up so eloquently, I have not gone to law school, although many have told me I should have, maybe in a next life, probably not, but that's another conversation. But you mentioned that when you go to law school, you are trained, educated, and practiced how to be a fierce advocate for one side, right? For your client, right? It's almost like divorce 101, legal 101, right? It's like you are now advocating for your side, your client, your point of view or their point of view or their case. And they don't really see the big picture. And is that a unique shift in your world of moving from being the litigator or trained as that or advocating for a child and now shifting more into the viewpoint of collaborative law and obviously having to train in mediation? Was that beneficial? Is that what you were looking for? Is that challenging? Like, how do you make that shift? Because I would think if you've got all that education and that training, that doesn't just leave you.
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me think about that. So first of all, it's not only taught, but it's like our ethical responsibility.
Understand, right.
And if you're doing employment law, if you're doing criminal law, if you're doing immigration law, if you're doing business law, it's absolutely necessary. You have to be a really strong advocate for your client. But I don't think the law was built for families. I don't think it particularly works for families. And it was really made for arm's length transactions, business transactions. And that's how divorce is treated, as if it's a business transaction. Yeah. But the relationships between the parties, meaning the ex-spouses or soon to be ex-spouses, is so complicated. And there's so many layers of things going on that, you know, I sit down with clients, like yesterday I was mediating and we were trying to figure out what do we do with the house, but there were so many other things going on. We can talk about it as a money transaction, but it's where are the kids going to be? Do the kids feel comfortable in both places? Is one spouse getting a huge house and the other one is living in a hovel? You know, I mean, it's these huge changes in expectations of ourselves and of each other in relationship. And so and at the same time, you're going to have to, if your kids are little, you're going to have to continue to work with this person for the next 20 years. I mean, right? Kids don't grow up when they're 18. Kids grow up when
they're
50 or 60. But
And you made a really good point about, and thank you for that, for the code of ethics. And that's, you know, there's a code of ethics that all attorneys must follow. And you're advocating for one side. But as you said, and maybe I'm paraphrasing, that it doesn't really work for family divorce in the sense that it isn't only a business transaction. There's other layers to it. You know, there's that mental, emotional, psychological, residential, practical family co-parenting side of it, as well as the judicial, residential, the insurance, the taxes. You know, there's a practical side of it and the address and the money and the spreadsheet and all of that. But there's so many different other complexities that can make it not just a business transaction.
Right. Absolutely. I say there's like five separations, right? There's the emotional separation, which usually happens before. There's the physical separation when people move out, when somebody moves out, or both people move. There's the financial separation, which usually happens much later. There's the sort of social separation, like, as my husband used to say, who gets custody of the friends?
I think friends, and sometimes even family, extended family.
Right. And then there's the legal separation is really just a little part of that.
Isn't that funny? And that's what most people focus on, you know, the documentation, the affidavit, the depositions and all the legal paperwork. But to get that all done, you know, you got to kind of work through the every day. As I say, the why and the questions. So I started this podcast and named it the Thriving in Chaos Project, sort of as an old story when I first had a friend back in Boston that had a radio show, Hello Elizabeth. And we were chatting about, you know, our situations and how we both had to thrive in the chaos. And it stuck. And here we are years later. So, that kind of rang a little bit with you. But tell me a little bit about that, how that hit a chord for you.
Well, there are two times in my life when it really did. One was in 2001, right before 9/11 happened. I had gotten married 6 months and 3 days. I came home and my husband had died of a heart attack. And I said to myself, oh my God, I am on, and I had really relied on him for everything. We hadn't been married long, but I'd known him for a long time, and he was really, we were very, very close. So I said, here I am. I have to do the hardest thing. I'm on this journey that I didn't ask to be on. I felt like I was plunked down in the middle of the woods somewhere, and I had to find my way out by myself. And I didn't have him for the first time. I was doing the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life, and I didn't have him with me. But of course, in a way, I did have him with me. But I had to, I realized almost right away that I was in a whole different, it's a whole different situation than what I had expected and than I had ever been in before. And I had to find my way out. And then I got remarried a few years later and had a wonderful relationship with my second husband. And he died of a sickle cell crisis right in the beginning of COVID in 2020. So here I was again. And I knew from the first time, a little bit from the grief journey, like what I had to do. But both times, and I think a lot about the relationship between divorce, the grief of divorce and starting over, and the grief of widow, being a widow and starting over. And I feel that that helps me be a little more compassionate toward my clients and my students also, because I know what it's like to start all over again. I know what it's like to have like sort of this, for lack of, forgive the phrase, but like to have this bomb dropped on your life and everything changes in an instant and unexpectedly. And I think the way, what I've learned from thriving in chaos, I mean, both of those times were very chaotic for me, of course, is to be very patient with myself, to not expect myself to do things that I could do before, to realize that, I remember when my first husband died, thinking that it was like Velcro. You know, if you take Velcro apart, there's like 100 little hooks and eyes or whatever they are, you know, that have to be torn apart. And I felt like that's what it was. And I had to heal each one individually. And I think it's sort of the same. Like, we don't really, like you said, we focus on the legal part of divorce, but we don't focus on like, well, he used to take out the garbage. Now I have to take out the garbage. Like the little things like that, right? I mean, you know, yeah. I don't know what the electric bill is. How am I supposed to, you know, like you just have to teach yourself so many things that you were used to be two people doing.
Yeah. I even see that as some of the reasons why there's so much overwhelm in divorce and widow. Maybe there's a parallel there. I remember when my father passed away and my mother, it took her a good couple years to kind of shift out of the gray that she kind of was feeling. Everything was like living in black and white and not color, kind of like the Wizard of Oz moment, you know? And I love the Velcro analogy. That's so crude. All those little fibers there that you, and the noise even that, you know, it's like gut-wrenching, but there's this whole new world you have to step into of ownership and responsibility and having courage and perseverance and resiliency. And thriving is a conscious choice. You can, you know, wallow and feel bad. And, you know, there's a little bit of that because we need to kind of rest and heal, but you got to pick yourself up and keep moving forward and seeing that whatever you've been going through, whether it be a divorce, a death, bankruptcy, look at these people going through the tornadoes lately and all these earth, the fire and, Pennsylvania. And, you know, there's all of the tragedies that happen in the world. And how do these people pick themselves up? It's strength and resiliency, but community and having experts there to help them, whether that be a mental health practitioner or an attorney or somebody that has been through it before. So, excuse me, kudos to you for having the resiliency to be able to pick yourself up from two devastating situations. And, you know, if that name is stuck, many other people have commented on it before too. I find it to be something that hit home for me because I knew that I could make a choice to either thrive or I could just shrivel up and survive. So thanks for sharing that. I know that's not easy. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your roadmap. And I love what you call it, landing on your feet. How did you decide this or decipher this? And how did you decide to put this together?
Well, the roadmap, which and we'll give you the link to that, is available for free for anybody. And that's really to help people sort of, a lot of times when I'm starting to work with clients, when they're in the beginning of the process, they want to know how long it's going to take and what to expect. And so I tried to integrate those different things that I said were going on, you know, the different kinds of separation, the financial, emotional, all of that, and tried to sort of map it out so that people sort of just have a sense of where they are, where they're going, and no, this is not going to last forever. You know, things, it might take a while, it might take a few years, as you said, but and sometimes obviously it takes longer than others. I mean, your experience sounds like it was really lasted a long time and very difficult. But even so, here you are, you're thriving now and helping and reaching back to help other people. And that's so important. I feel like that's what I'm trying to do also. So the roadmap is really just sort of to give you a sense of where you are and where you're going. Mm. And then I designed a course, Landing on Your Feet, which is really to give people the legal framework and to help them work with their lawyers better. So it doesn't replace having a lawyer mm-hmm. or a mediator, but it gives you the basis of the information so that you understand like what the framework is for alimony, what the framework is for equitable distribution, how the law kind of thinks about things mm-hmm. because law logic and real life logic are different. So
yes, you can say that again. Well, I love what you just said, because you said the course really, especially coming from your point of view of being an attorney, is you're teaching people how to best use or better utilize their attorney better. So how can you, if you only have a few little tips to share, what is the best way? Because I see people coming to me in many different stages of divorce, but one of the most expensive ways is when they're already litigating, they have an attorney, it's dragging out, or their spouse's opposing counsel is also, the two of them are either not cooperating, one of them are not complying, there's something going on. And it's dragging out for maybe not 8.5 years like mine did, but it's going on a lot longer than hopefully would be optimal, both financially and emotionally. So what are some great tips that you can give people so they can learn to work with their family law attorney better?
Well, one is to get educated. Mm-hmm. Two is to realize that your lawyer is not your therapist and they're charging by the hour. So if you're going on a rant about what your spouse did, your ex-spouse, and you're talking to them for an hour, they're bringing up the bill, right? And they're not going to necessarily stop you. But that's, you know, I would like, it's it's a good idea when you're talking to your attorney to give them exactly the information they need, but not a lot more. And don't rely on them for emotional support. Rely on your community, rely on your therapist, rely on your divorce coach for emotional support. But come to that meeting with the lawyer like you're treating a banker or mm-hmm. the IRS or something. You want to be honest. You want to give them the information they need. You have to be honest about the things you did wrong too. Don't try to look good for your lawyer.
Don't candy coat it. Right. Yeah.
Right. Because if there are negative facts, this is another thing they teach us in law school, right? The lawyer can figure out how to deal with the negative facts, but they have to know them. Don't let them be blindsided by having your spouse's lawyer tell them something that you did.
Yeah, you don't want your attorney to also be a private investigator, a forensic accountant, and an FBI agent. You know, they do a lot of figuring things out, if you know what I mean. That might have been a weird analogy, but you know, they're there to apply the law to your case and give you the best counsel with about applying the laws to your situation, and also lay a foundation of your case so that you are able to present it if you are litigating in a case where, you know, you walk in and you've got a strong case and a strong advocate, not a weak case and no leverage. But I find that when it comes to them using their family law attorney as that therapist or a guardian ad litem or even a co-parenting coach or some sort of juvenile pediatric mental health practitioner, or even are asking for financial advice. Granted, you hit the nail on the head there. They're going to listen because they're counselors at law. Many attorneys are compassionate and empathetic people, and they're willing to listen. But again, I can hear it go cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And forget the hourly rate. It's more like, you know, 6 to 10 or 8, 12 minute increments, whether you're sending an email or a phone call or whatever. I always say to my clients, if either have two memos on your phone, questions for Paulette and questions for attorney. And those two lists should probably be different. Maybe some of the questions will be the same, the question, and ask me, and then I'll go ask them and let, you know, let's bat it around and see how it feels. Or, you know, if you're old school, have it on a piece of paper, making sure it's in a confidential place that you're spouse won't see, but confidentiality is key. But you've got to know that you're using the right professional for the right purpose. So yeah, that is such great advice. And I think a lot of people forget it. You know, they go to their attorney and they'll send them paragraphs and paragraphs of data about the case. And will the attorney read it? Yes. But like you said, just send them the facts that they need to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, the other thing is realize that the attorney's dealing with a lot of clients and they're probably very busy and they're probably in court a lot. I mean, I know when I was litigating, I was in court all day and then I would come back to read my emails at 6 o'clock at night. I was absolutely exhausted. I was hungry. I was trying to think about like, what was I going to do for dinner and how was I going to get home? And that's when I was reading the emails. And it's not that I didn't care, but I didn't have the bandwidth to read something that was really long and involved. If somebody wrote me three questions and I could answer the three questions and
yes,
and get right and be useful to them. But yes, if somebody sent me something that was long and confused, it was very hard.
Yes. Listen, that's so good. So when you write an email to your attorney, this goes for any professional, you know, say hello or good morning or, you know, a nice introduction, and then bullet point or number your points and make them, if you can say something in 5 words and not 20, do it. And right, then leave a space so that there's some space for them to type a response and then bullet it or number it. And then the second point, and I wouldn't suggest more than 3 to 4 in one email. In fact, 1 or 2 is better, but if you have to get the third or fourth in, go for it, but make sure they're succinct and specific. They're not just airy fairy, vague questions, and you're not dealing with the emotional part. You're dealing with practical information. So important. That will save you a ton of money. And it will also build trust and an esprit de corps and a rapport between you and your attorney, because your attorney will now look forward to reading your emails that you send them because, oh, this one ain't so bad. You know, I can read this and it makes sense and it's logical. And my client has their act together versus, oh no, I'm afraid to open this one. This could be a can of worms. So yeah, take Joy's advice. Be really important, careful that you're only sending them the data and asking them the questions they need. So this course, is it both, is it video? Is it a workbook? Is it audio? Like, how did you break it down for people? I think you said you got it in 5 separate layers. I see that you've got, is the root shoots, light green leaves, dark green leaves, and blossoms. I love that analogy on the roadmap. How did you break down the landing on your feet? Is it similar or different?
It's different.
Okay.
So I'm looking for the list of the modules right now. So the one module is about setting yourself up. So that's like how to fill out your budget form and your list of assets, sort of some mindset stuff, and like sort of getting ready. The next module is about your different process options, like mediation, collaborative law, litigation, that kind of thing, and figuring out which one is appropriate in which situation. So which one would work for you?
Yeah.
And then there's modules on the 4 things that kind of need to be figured out. So that's alimony. How are you going to support yourself? Dividing up the property with special attention to dividing up the house. Child support and creating a parenting plan. So the legal and like where the kids are going to be, where, when, and how are you going to make the decisions? Right. And then I'm working on, I haven't quite finished it, but a module on negotiating. And then sort of planning next steps. And so for each module, there's a series of videos, and I also have it available as a podcast because I know sometimes people need a little more privacy and it's better to listen.
Sure.
Listen to a lot of podcasts. That's how I found you. And then there's also worksheets that people can fill in, and I'll review them and give them comments. And then there's also monthly Q&A sessions.
Perfect.
So it's all of that.
No, it's covering the gamut. And I love that you're bringing that from an attorney's point of view. So when I wrote Better Divorce Blueprint, I broke it down into before, during, and after. Modules 1, 2, and 3 are before, 4, 5, and 6 are during, and 7 and 8 are after. Because I'm not bringing Better Divorce Blueprint from an attorney's point of view. I'm bringing it from more of a holistic point of view. And my background being an ERYT 500, Ayurvedic consultant, macrobiotics, and also having been an entrepreneur and working with a lot of women in different careers, I saw it as more of an emotional, psychological, the contemplating part, because 70% of divorce is filed by women, and 2 years is the average amount of time that most women of that 70% contemplate before they tell anyone. For me, it was more like, 5 to 10 years of living in that confused world of trying to fix the marriage, work on the marriage, go to therapy, go to counseling. Can we fix it? What do we do? Fix. Most women like try to fix things. So although some men try to, the gadgeters, right? So it's a big part of the process. And the more tools you have and the more education you have, I find the less mistakes you make. And time is money when it comes to divorce. So you want to not rush, because sometimes you do need to kind of step back and let it unfold. But for the most part, if things are dragging on, there's a reason. And that is a time to reevaluate. So I love that you're doing that. I also find that it's important for people going through the divorce process when it gets to be longer. Although my shortest one was just 43 days, mediating from the day they met me to the day they got the decree from the judge.
Wow.
I could not believe it. I was so excited. It was not a terribly complicated case, but still I was like, excellent. So, and they never had to step foot in a courthouse. Now is retreating. So I'm proud to announce that May 4th to 10th Tierra Womack and I will be hosting a retreat in Belize. So the link will be in the bio as well for those of you that need to have something to look forward to in any pivot in your life, be career, bankruptcy, divorce, death. It doesn't just have to be divorce. But when you're coming out of something that's been chaotic and exhausting and you're looking for something that is a reboot and a renew, this is your retreat, and it's in 2024. So don't panic. It's not just, you know, a few months away. So, by the time this, you'd be surprised, it's going to be 2024 before we know it. So, thank you so much, Joy. And what is the best way for people to find you?
JoyRosenthal.com.
Easy.
Very easy.
Easy.
And just want to say that the support that you give and the coaching that you do is so important and just so wonderful. And the books that you have available, I think it's really amazing, because the legal part is one part, as I said, but there's so much else going on and people really need help through that. And every divorce is so different. You know, we tend to rely on our family and friends, but to go be there for, to have somebody who's been through it and who has a lot of experience working with a lot of different people and understands that every divorce is different is really great. So I'm so grateful to you for everything you're doing.
Well, thank you, Joy. You're so kind. And I did not ask her to say that. And it's also a matter of getting the client the right professionals. Right. Yeah. So I think of myself as a quarterback and a cheerleader too, a little, my days of being a choreographer, making sure I had the right lighting and scenery and costume and everything. It's a bit of a, you got to have the right actors and actresses there to support you. Not that they're putting on a show. They're real. They're really going to be there for you because they know what they're doing, but you've got to work with the right people. So thank you, Joy. She's in New York. Look her up. Joy Rosenthal in New York. So with no further ado, everybody, keep thriving. Happy spring. Oh my goodness. If I've ever been more looking forward to spring, this is it. So I'm looking forward to it, to all my friends here in Georgia and New England and all over the world. Keep thriving in the chaos and come and join me down in Belize. So keep thriving. See you next week. Oh, there we go. Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.